Greetings, friends, initiates, disciples, seekers of true knowledge and wisdom. Welcome to the Temple of the Dividend Discount Models. Here ye shall learn of secrets unknown to the initiated, the unenlightened, right. Okay, well, I know. But really, folks, it is a truism that most investors have no knowledge of some of these techniques that you're going to learn. So as I told you, and I wasn't kidding, you are going to be the guru for your friends and family and coworkers. It is a weighty responsibility. So let's get started. On slide number 17, the dividend discount models. Shares of stocks are valued on the basis of the present value of the future dividend streams the stock is projected to produce. Hence the dividend discount model, right? They go by various names, dividend valuation models, discounted cash flow models. If you recall from our previous presentation, we said that the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. Therefore, dividend discount models should be extremely popular, right? Well, during the 1990s, investors who adhered to these types of models were considered old-fashioned, out-of-date, fuddy-duddies. In fact, I remember one of the celebrities in investing trashing Mr. Warren Buffett for still believing or using these old models. Who had the last laugh? But investors who used these techniques weathered the 2000 to 2002 downturn very well. Dividends became important again because, as we said, dividends don't lie. It didn't help us in 2008. Nothing did. But still, I believe that these models will help, as I've said in the past and will say again, tilt the odds in your favor toward companies that have their roots deep in the economy and are going to be around tomorrow and the next year and the year after that. Now, that's not to say there's some companies that are growing their earnings very quickly, not paying any dividends. We're going to take a look at those too. Don't worry. And I know that there are many other strategies out there that we'd already discussed and we'll discuss in detail later on. So this is just one view, folks. Remember that. I tell you up front my biases. Everybody has their biases. So you're going to explore other strategies and other techniques, because it's a journey that we have for the rest of our lives. That's the cool thing about investing. No one person can know everything about all the different types of investments and all different strategies, and you're going to find your way. Okay, so let's get started on slide 18 with the purest incarnation of the dividend discount model. Piano, it looks like math. Relax. It's going to be a whole, as I said before in the previous presentation, the actual calculations are a whole lot easier than the concepts involved. The value of a stock is equal to the present value of all expected future dividend payments. So this is just a fancy way of saying, look, the price now, that's sub-zero, is equal to the dividend in year number one divided by one plus K. Well, what's K? In baseball, it's a strikeout. But no. It's the required rate of return. In other words, what we expect to return from our investment, what we expect to get. And then it's equal to the dividend in year number two divided by 1 plus K squared. And then the dividend in year number three divided by 1 plus K to the third. And you keep doing this for as many years as you want to. And I promised you way back at the beginning that we would not do exponentiation, and we won't. So just stick with us. But if you look at the example from the book, which I think is not very smart, you have a company that has three annual dividends of $100 per share. So if our required rate of return is 15%, which I've told you is already higher than I believe one should expect, although there are people who do, we take $100 divided by a dollar, $100, the first dividend, divided by 1 plus K. K is 15%, 0.15, so 1.15, make sure you understand that. And then we add to that $100 divided by 1.15 squared, and then $100 divided by 1.15 to the third. And if this company were to pay us three annual dividends of $100 each, we require a 15% return on investment. We believe the company would be worth $228.32. But how many companies pay three annual dividends and then promptly go out of business? Plus, Payana, we keep using this term present value. What does present value mean anyway? Okay, let's take a look. Slide 19. What is present value? Well, it's a fancy phrase for the value of a lump sum or series of payments to be received at some future date. It's the opposite of future value. It's the inverse for you math fans. Did you work on any of the optional future value calculations back in chapter one? You didn't have to. I told you didn't have to. But in chapter one, we said, what happens if we start putting money away today? What's it going to be worth in the future? Well, present value is just the opposite. If we get some money in the future, what is it worth to us today? So, for example, if we had $10,000 today and put it in the bank or some, well, not the bank at 8%, no, put it in some investment for 10 years and got 8%, that future value of that $10,000 will be $21,589. Okay, so $10,000 today, the future value of which for 10 years at 8%, is $21,589. The present value of $21,589 in 10 years at 8% today is worth $10,000. So what would you rather have? $10,000 today or $21,589 10 years from now? Well, if your required rate of return is 8%, they are equivalent. It wouldn't matter to you. You could take the $10,000 today or the $21,589 10 years from now if you wanted to get 8%. Present value and future value are just two sides of the same coin. In finance, present value tells us what the future value is worth today. We are taking a value that we're going to get sometime in the future and bringing it back to the present. Hence the name present value. So, on slide 20, did the formula for the DDM scare you? Well, this formula has the present value calculation built into it. We mortals are simply going to use the present value tables just as we did in the chapter one, future value tables, for those of you who did the optional exercises. But for those of you who took Business 121, they should be familiar because remember we did the future value calculations in Business 121. So the formula changes from this scary thing with exponentiation to simply dividend one times the present value multiplier for year number one. Dividend in year number two times the present value multiplier for year number two. Dividend number three times the present value multiplier for year number three, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So these present value multipliers come from this table. Oh, that's not that hard. Let's do the same example over again using the present value multipliers from the present value table on the class website. So there it is. You can print out a copy, which is a good thing to do because you're going to need it for the calculations, or just have it on your screen. So again, we have three annual dividends of $100 per share. Again, our required rate of return, which I think is a little high, but other people say, no, you should be going for 15%. Good luck. Rate of return is 15%. So $100 times 0.870, $100 point times 0.756, $100 times 6.658. Now, where did they come from? I'm going to call up the table. Here it is. So we go across the year number one to 15%. There's the 0.870. Year number two, 0.756. Year number three, 0.658. So you see, we don't need to do exponentiation. It's built into this table, and we just grab the numbers from the table. And eventually, we'll have a spreadsheet that does it out for us automatically. But just remember, 0.870, 0.756, 0.658. So, $100 times 0.870, $100 times 0.756, $100 0.658 gives us $75.60 and $65.80. So what does that mean? It means that $100 a year from now, if we want a 15% return, is equal to $87 today. $100 2 years from now, if we expect a 15% return, is worth $75.60 today. And $100 3 years from now, if we require a 15% rate of return, is equal to $65.80. You add those three up and you get approximately $228.40, which is 8 cents off. And why is it 8 cents off? It's because we're only using three digits of accuracy. If we had used many more digits, we'd get exactly 32 cents, but 8 cents, what's the difference? Okay. So the sum of the present values of the future dividend cash flows equals our perceived value of the stock. Cool? Yeah, I think so. And we're going to use this model and its various permutations to do just that. Compute what we believe the company is worth today. So let's take a look at the first model, which is the zero growth model, which is really not covered in our book, but it's really just a special case of the next model we'll deal with. And that assumes that dividends will continue at a fixed rate indefinitely into the future. So this is good for companies like utilities that aren't growing very fast, that have been paying a consistent dividend, no growth in the dividend. The value of the stock is equal to the annual dividends divided by the required rate of return. So if we have a company that's paying us $3 per share and has been paying us $3 per share for many years, and we require a 6% rate of return, then $3 divided by 0.06 is equal to $50 a share. We'd be willing to pay $50 a share for this company. Now, what is the market price? Well, that's something completely different, right? We have to compare what we believe it's worth to what the market price is. Does this model look familiar? Well, for you math fans, it's simply another way to view the dividend yield. If you go back and look at the dividend yield on slide 23, we have annual dividends divided by the market price. That's equal to the dividend yield. Well, the value of the stock now is essentially our market price down here in the denominator, but it's been flipped. It's been put over here on the left side, and the dividend yield has been put over here on the right side in the denominator, the required rate of return. So they've flipped these two things. Investors who emphasize the zero growth model are valuing the stock almost exclusively for its dividend yield. And this is one thing people do when we get to preferred stock. This is often what people do with preferred stock. They look at it simply for the dividend, kind of like a bond. What are we getting in terms of our income and the price appreciation, the capital appreciation, is not something that's important to us. We're just looking at the stock from its dividend. Okay, that's great. So that's why it is typical for us to see a utility. And if on the worksheet you see a utility, you know you're going to use the zero growth model, right? Okay, so let's take a look at slide number 24. And this is a real life example as of February 26, 2021. Consolidated Edison. Who are they? Well, that's the utility company for New York City. Thomas Edison. Right. Current market price is $65.65 on the 26th of February, 2021. And it's currently paying $3.10 per year in annual dividends. And those dividends are fairly reliable. So the question is, what is our required rate of return? If we use 8%, we take $3.10 divided by 0.08. That's what 8% is, 0.08. And that gives us $38.75. Well, as far as we're concerned, the stock is overpriced if our required rate of return is 8%. What if we only require 5%? $3.10 divided by 0.05. Do it. Make sure you do it. Make sure I got it right. Is $62, which, the stock is selling for $65.65. The stock for us is still too expensive if we require a rate of return of 5%. So with a market price of $65.65, the stock is actually yielding $4.72. So if we assume that we're not going to get much price appreciation, that they're going to continue to pay our dividend, and we're happy with $4.72, I'm sorry, $4.72% on our money, my apologies, we're getting $3.10, then this would be a decent stock for us. Is it making sense now? I hope. Okay, great. So now, in the face-to-face class, we would stop and go to worksheet number one and do the problem, which, hint, 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 will always be a utility, where we use the zero growth model. Cool? Okay, now, the constant perpetual growth model, which is a really dumb name, because constant and perpetual kind of mean the same things, don't they? This is from the Department of Redundancy Department. Let's assume dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate perpetually. I love that word because you can spit on your friends when you say it. Perpetually. Into the future. So really, it's the same formula. Here's, if you go back in the previous slide, annual dividends divided by required rate of return. So it look familiar? Well, this time we're going to add times 1 plus the dividend growth rate in the numerator, and we're going to subtract the constant growth rate, the dividend growth rate, in the denominator. Now, I said that the previous one, the previous model, is really just a special case of this model. Because if you put in zero for the constant growth rate, you math fans will see you get the same formula, annual dividends divided by required rate of return. Because if you multiply anything times one, you get the same thing. And if you subtract zero from anything, you get the same thing. So, but this is a company that has been growing their dividends at 5% per year. So let's say that the dividend is $10 per share. We're not worried about the yield. We're worried about how much they are paying us in dividends. So they're paying us $10 a share. And if we assume, or we have seen, that they have been growing their dividends at 5%, that means next year we're going to get $10.50. If our required rate of return is 15%, which again I think is a little too high, we get $10 times 1.05, or $10.50. Divided by 15% minus 5%. Remember, you got to do the numerator first, then the denominator, and then divide. And so 15% minus 5% is 10%, or 0.1. So $10.50 divided by 0.1 is $105. So for us, the stock, we believe, is worth $105. Now, what's the market price? Again, that's something different. We have to compare what we believe the stock is with what the market is giving to us now. So let's notice that this is good for companies with consistent dividend growth rate. And they're out there, folks. There are especially large companies with their roots deep in the economy. Do I sound like a broken record? Yes. Slide number 26. The constant perpetual growth model as applied to a real life company called 3M. What a silly name. Well, it used to be called Minnesota Mining and Materials. It's a blue chip company. It's in the Dow, folks. So it's one of the companies you can do for your Chapter 6 semi-bonus assignment. And they make scotch tape and post-it notes along with thousands of other products. The current market price on February 26th is $175.05. They're currently paying $5.92, and let's assume that the dividends have been growing around 8% per year. Our required rate of return is 13%. So if we take the $5.92 times 1 plus the growth rate, 1.08, that gives us $6.39, give or take a few, fractions of a penny, 6.3936. You divide that by the 13% minus the 8%, that's 0.05, and it gives us $127, almost $128, and not a great buy if we require 13%, is it? No. But what if we simply say, we're happy with 10%? $5.92 times 1.08 is that same $6.39.36. But this time we take 10% minus 8% and gives us 2% or $319.68. What a deal! It's selling for $175. And we believe if we require a 10% return on investment, and if they grow their dividends continually at 8%, then the model is telling us this is a very good buy for us. We need to do a whole lot more research, dear students. And note that the model is very sensitive to our choice of the required rate of return. And this makes sense because, remember, everybody out there is looking at stocks and saying, I can get 5% out of this stock, or I can get 10%, or I can get 15%. And others are saying, I can't get that, so I'm going to sell it. So that's what makes horse races, as the Germans like to say. Markets are like horse races. Everybody doesn't bet on the same horse. It doesn't translate well, but I love the saying. The Germans say, that's what makes horse races. I say, some people like chocolate, some people like vanilla, and some people like strawberry. Okay, another company that you may have heard of, Yum Brands. Yum Brands? Yeah, they own Kentucky Fried Rat, Pizza Crap, and Taco Smell. I'm sorry, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Pizza Hut, and Taco Bell. Folks, you can make a lot of money selling people fat, sugar, and salt, and you can also make them very unhealthy. But the current price on February 26th of 2021 is $103.53. Currently paying $2 of annual dividend. And again, let's assume that they're growing their dividends around 8% a year. Our required rate of return is 13%. So we take that $2 times 1.08, 1 plus the 8%, 1.08, and that gives us $2.16. And then we subtract it by 13% minus the 8%, 0.05, and that gives us $43.20. Not that great. Okay, well, how about if we just lower our required rate of return to 10%? Remember, it's our decision. Then we get $2 times 1.08 divided by 10% minus 8%. That's 0.02%. So that $2.16 divided by 0.02 is $108. Hey, it's selling for $103.53, at least it was on the 26th of February. So this model is telling us, if we're willing to accept 10%, this is a company that we should do far more research on, because it might just be one of our potential investments that we want to include in our portfolio, if we don't mind that this stuff is killing people. Don't worry, McMurderers is just as bad. And I know, I have to get off my soapbox and stop talking about people eating unhealthy food that is contributing to diabetes and heart disease and strokes, and just shut up, Piano. Slide 28. Travelers Company. Travelers, it's an insurance company. When you grow up, you want to be a bank. And if you can't be a bank, you want to be an insurance company. We don't call insurance the necessary evil for nothing, dear students. The current market price as of 26th of February, $145.50. Currently paying $3.40 of annual dividends. And again, let's assume that dividends are growing around 8% per year. If our required rate of return is 13%, we run the numbers, $3.40 times 1.08, 3.672, divided by the 0.05, 13% minus 8%, $73.44. Well, we're probably not going to get 13% from our traveler's choice. But if we reduce our required rate of return to 10%, then yeah, $3.04 times 1.08, 3.672 divided by 10% minus 8%, 0.02, is $183. So maybe we ought to spend more time researching travelers' insurance companies. Okay, slide 29, Caterpillar. You know who they are, right? They make the tractors and the earth-moving equipment, and they're all over the world. And by the way, they own Solar Turbines, who are based here in San Diego. What is solar? They don't make solar equipment, folks. They make turbines that are moved to job sites where the Caterpillar companies and Caterpillar equipment is building new bridges and all the other new stuff that they build. So it makes a lot of sense for Caterpillar to own Solar Turbines. The current market price is $215.88, and they're currently paying $4.12. Let's assume they've been growing their dividend around 8%. And if we run the numbers, we get $88.99 at 13%. Not so good. But if we just lower our rate of return, $222. Hey, if we're happy with 10%, CAT appears to be a decent buy. Now we need to do more research. Have I said that already? I think I have. So, this is one of those situations where the model is saying, you know what, this one might just be one of the companies you want to include in your portfolio. Lastly, Altria. Altria, who are they? Well, you've heard of Philip Morris, Marlboro Cigarettes, Virginia Dims, I'm sorry, Slims. Current market price, $43.60. Currently paying $3.44, assume the dividends are growing around 8%, and with that same required rate of return, $3.44 times 1.08 is about 3.7152, divided by 13% minus 8%, 0.05 gives us $74.30. Whoa, our model says that Altria is worth $74 if we expect 13%. What a buy! You conveniently ignore the fact that tobacco kills 400,000 Americans every year. Would you want to invest in a company that, when used as directed, kills its consumers? Well, as a matter of fact, it's been a pretty darn good stock over decades. Would you buy Altria? And a hint. Who do you think is going to win big when marijuana finally becomes legal at the federal level? You know, everybody's worried about who's, you know, these different small startups that are selling tobacco. I mean, not tobacco, marijuana. And I'm thinking, once it becomes legal, I mean really legal, not just a gentleman's agreement between the states and the feds. Literally, folks, the feds could shut down all these dispensaries tomorrow. They could walk in, take all the money, take all the equipment, put all these people in jail if they wanted to. They say they don't want to, but they could. I'm waiting for it to become legal. So who do you think is going to win? I think it's going to be the Altrias, the British American Tobaccos of the world, the big cigarette producers, because they got the distribution. They have the manufacturing. They have the marketing. Yes. Okay. Let's continue. Who is that? Who
is? I don't know.
Who are you?
You know who it is.
It's my conscience.
Come clean.
Come clean about what?
Fess up.
Fess up about what?
Where did you get the assumed dividend growth, huh?
I made them up.
Huh?
I made them up. All these companies are growing their dividends faster than 8%.
That's better.
Oh, don't you hate it when your conscience comes a-calling? Yes, dear students, the constant perpetual growth model is very sensitive to the assumed growth rate of dividends. The recent dividend growth rates of 3M, Yum! Brands, Target, Caterpillar, Altria are all 8% or higher. Travelers is 8.2, Caterpillar 9.5, Altria 9.5, Yum 10.2, and 3M has been growing its dividend at over 12%. But the model does not work if the required rate of return is equal to or less than the dividend growth rate. You get division by zero or negative prices. Therefore, we should actually raise our expected rates of return for all these companies. All of these companies are better buys than what the model is telling us for our 10 or 13% rates of return. But they're not the only ones, folks. These are blue chip companies with long histories of rising dividends, but they are not alone. Exxon, Chevron, Procter & Gamble, United Technologies, Abbott Labs, AbbVie, Microsoft, Pfizer are just a few. Now, I personally have been finding fewer and fewer meeting the 8, 9, 10% that I like to see, which is why I tell people I think the market's overvalued on a long-term basis. But when is it going to correct? I don't know. I just do know that history tells us that eventually we're going to have a downtime. I don't know when it's going to be. We'll see. But still, there are still companies, not the sexy ones that we hear about on the internet news and the news about what's, you know, the next company that jumped 100% in 2 days. Yeah, these companies are boring. But in the investment world, in my humble opinion, boring is good. Slide 32, the constant growth model. Well, this assumes that dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate for a specified number of years. What's going on here? Well, this is really the constant perpetual growth model, but with a term added for the number of years that we believe the growth is going to continue. You see what's happening? These models are getting more and more complex. Why? Because they can. Does it mean they're any better? No. Paquito, do we really need to know this? No. This model takes the constant perpetual growth model one step further, adding a term to account for constant growth for a number of years. Just as the constant perpetual growth model evolved from the zero growth model, adding an additional term to account for the constant growth of dividends. But this assumes we know how many years the growth is going to continue or whether or not it's even going to continue. You see the pattern? Just because mathematicians can make things more difficult doesn't mean it makes sense to make things more difficult. And on slide 33, we see yet another evolution, taking it one step further. The variable growth model, the two-stage dividend model, assumes dividends will grow at a specified rate in the future, presumably the fast growth stage, and then grow at a second, presumably slower growth rate once the company matures. Folks, look, this model may look very impressive, especially to those who love math, which is not the vast majority of us, but it has some serious problems. It is very difficult to accurately predict future dividend growth during the initial fast growth stage of a stock. Usually companies do not pay significant dividends while they are growing rapidly. And more importantly, in my humble opinion, many decades ago, Benjamin Graham, who wrote The Intelligent Investor, which is a book you're eventually going to read, don't read it now, warned against using overly sophisticated mathematical models to value stocks. He said any strategy that removes human judgment is bound to fail, or at least have serious problems. And this is my serious problem, or my bugaboo with index funds. They remove human judgment. And some people say that's a great thing because humans are not smart. Well, you know what? Some are. Just because I can't hit a fastball at 98 miles an hour doesn't mean there aren't people who can. Just because I can't hit a little white ball 350 yards down the fairway in four shots doesn't mean there are people who can't do it. There are people who can do it. And there are people who have shown that they can consistently, prudently invest and return good rates of return in good times and bad times, and even beat the market over time. So there. Slide number 34, observations of the dividend discount models. Well, the first question is, how do you use them for a company that isn't paying any dividends? The simple answer is you can't, not at least the ones we've looked at. The constant perpetual growth model is usually unrealistic except for a small number of companies. Dividend growth rates are very difficult to estimate. With large cap, well-established companies, historical growth rates may be useful. But with fast-growing companies in new industries, it is almost impossible. The problems of the dividend discount models notwithstanding, dear students, repeat after me. The value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. Cool. So now, in the face-to-face classes, we would stop and do the next problem in the worksheets. And it will say, the company has been growing their dividends at a constant rate. Okay, that's your clue. Because in our next presentation, dear students, we're about to use my favorite version of the dividend discount models, the discounted cash flow model. And with this model, not only can we use it on companies that are paying dividends, we can actually use it for companies that are not paying dividends. Ooh, this is so exciting. Thank you so much for being in our class, for sticking with us this long. You are absolutely awesome. Now go back and do the worksheets over and over and over again. See you at our next presentation, where we will discuss the discounted cash flow model.